As the clock of doom winds down ever more slowly, as it runs out of steam, and we approach whatever it is that's approaching, and I can guarantee you at least a large part of it is going to be radioactive. Michael Collins is with us every Monday. He'll be with us for the full hour tonight. Yoichi Shimatsu is actually in transit right now. Couldn't do the program this week. We have tons to talk about. Michael Collins of EnviroReporter.com and Denise Ann, who lets him appear on this program and lets him continue to contribute along with her efforts some of the most important information on the internet, period, about the Fukushima calamity, the greatest catastrophe in recorded human history. Now, there is talk of clear evidence of a nuclear war having been fought in a part of India. There is an enormous square mileage. I've forgotten how many square miles, 1,000, something like that, which shows obvious evidence of ancient nuclear impact and fusion of materials. They look like glass. So let's see how Michael... wait a minute. Since Michael lives in Mexifornia, maybe it's Miguel Collins.
Well, I'll tell you where I live. I live on the edge of a big ocean. And
You mean a big spent fuel pool?
A big spent fuel pool. Just like the spent fuel pools that we talk about in that series I've promised everybody for months.
Yeah.
Black Swan Songs is up, thanks to Jeff. Some of you folks know about it, EnviroReporter.com. Black Swan Songs. That is 23,000 words of very important investigative journalism you folks got to know about. But when you talk about Fukushima, it almost eclipses every other issue. The thing about Black Swan Song is we talk about how it could be a lot worse here because there's twice as much spent fuel in San Onofre, south of San Clemente in California along the coast. There's twice as much as it's at Fukushima. But you know, Jeff, you sent me a note about this because it's so horrific in the telling. A superb website from down under, Newcastle Herald, won a website of the year recently from an organization in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Just the best. And they published a story by a fellow named Greg Ray about the experience of a yachtsman named Ivan McFadyen, and I'll just call him by his first name. Ivan is an experienced yacht person. This story kind of worked its way over to me through an email from a lady from Hawaii. And in her email, it's very telling the difference between awareness of the disaster in Fukushima overseas as it is to us. She writes, you know, we have occasional lectures here in Maui about the floating and airborne aftermath of the tsunami, but there are not enough words or action,
mm-hmm.
even here when we see the detritus. Nothing is jarring Hawaiians when this stuff is floating in. This guy goes sailing from Australia up to Osaka, Japan. First thing is, he'd done it 10 years before, and
uh-huh.
he lived off the sea.
Yeah.
He was eating fish right out of the ocean, and there were birds and a live ecosystem going on. From the same way, Australia to Osaka. This time, nothing. 28 days, they caught two fish. 28 days. But they saw a huge trawler. And these guys in the trawler come over in a speedboat to these two sailors, Ivan being one of them, and they dump a bunch of fish on them. And they said, you know what? We can't eat all this fish. They go, listen, we're going to dump it in the sea anyway because we're only after tuna, and we're going to grab everything and kill everything, throw it away, kill it, let it back into the sea and for this tuna. And so take it anyway. Now, if that doesn't sound horrific, folks, the killing of our wonderful sea life on a grand scale like that for tuna, to have it end up on a sushi plate, to be the kind of tuna that traverses the Pacific and gets in its tissues, unbeknownst to that beautiful animal, cesium-134, cesium-137. It's unreal.
Strontium. It's in the cartilage of fish, the bones of fish. Strontium replaces calcium. It's right there, and it's in the tissue. By the way, the story is called "The Ocean is Broken," written by George Roy, and rather Ray, George Ray. He went up to Osaka and then to San Francisco. Okay, so he went all the way across the Pacific from the western side to the eastern side. And a couple of quotes from the story. You can find it at rents.com. It's in the center section there, the Fukushima section. Here are a few quotes. "The next leg of the long voyage was from Osaka to San Francisco. And for most of that trip, the desolation was tinged with nauseous horror and a degree of fear. After we left Japan, it felt as if the ocean itself was dead." Ivan McFadden said that. He said, "We saw hardly any living things." This is the yachtsman talking, Ivan. "We saw one whale sort of rolling helplessly on the surface with what looked like a big tumor on its head. It was pretty sickening. I've done a lot of miles on the ocean in my life, and I'm used to seeing turtles, dolphins, sharks, big flurries of feeding birds. But this time, for 3,000 nautical miles, I'm going to insert here, 2.5 years after Fukushima, there was nothing alive to be seen." End quote. "In place of the missing life was garbage in astounding volumes. And something else, the boat's vivid yellow paint job, never faded by sun or sea in years gone past, reacted with something in the water off Japan, losing its sheen in a strange and unprecedented way." It's a terrific story, and if it doesn't underscore what Michael and Yochi and I have been saying for, well, it'll be 3 years next March, won't it?
Oh, yeah.
The Pacific Ocean is literally dying.
And the thing is, we still have this incredible denial in this country. Folks like us are looked at as alarmists in many cases when it is absolutely not the truth. I'm not alarmed because I've taken all the measures that I can from my lovely bride and I and tried to share as many of them as possible with the kind folks that listen to us. But the fact of the matter is, when you get this firsthand account of what we've been talking about, and it blew my mind, Jeff. I got to tell you that the extent of the damage is so overwhelming. And the tumor on the whale, that's very telling. The paint being peeled off when sailing to Japanese water, that's very telling. But I'll tell you what else is telling. What we're being told, you know, this kind of, we've had several reports in the last week of radioactive kelp, radioactive fish,
right,
along the west coast of,
yeah,
the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and then we have this story, and we have a Fukushima worsening in incredible ways, and people get, like, understandably very bent out of shape. So what happens? US EPA comes out instead of they had a no comment in one situation with one spokesperson. With another spokesperson, we are monitoring this and nothing showing on our RadNet is showing anything. Now, I got to tell you, Jeff, I beg to defer, and I'm going to point out a few cities where we just got, in the last couple of days, EPA
mm-hmm.
saying about all of this, everything is just A-OK according to our redness.
Let me do something real quick. This will fit in perfectly. I just got an email from one of my friends from many years, and he asks, please ask your fabulous guest why, for all that he knows, is he still living on the West Coast? And for that matter, what about you? And we'll answer that right now. We're going to go right through the break, as we always do with Michael. And the answer is real simple, really. It's home. And let me underscore that answer by suggesting that there are many things that can be done to minimize our Michael's risk, Denise Ann's risk, your risk, my risk, that people need to be doing. Because as Michael is about to tell you, being on the West Coast doesn't necessarily mean we're going to get the worst of the radiation. It's something called a jet stream. Go ahead, Michael.
Yes, there's a jet stream, and you can't. There are places that you can go that will have less radiation, but the fact is, these pulses that move through this country, and I'll talk about them in a second, do move around. Now, you will have long-term patterns because what we've been doing on EnviroReporter.com is we've taken the EPA data and we've made it easier to look at. And so we have 123 different cities and stations that the government has beta and gamma detectors going 24/7. But the beta is what we're interested in because that's the kind of radiation that is made by Fukushima, the cesium-137, strontium-90, cesium-134. Plutonium-239. These are beta emitters. And so what we do, shorthand, and we've talked about this, and everybody listening who has listened to the show more than once ought to know, one of the reasons we're here is because it's going to get so much worse that it's great now. We've got HEPA filters running in our home. We filter our water. We control our food. We detect how much radiation or lack thereof is in the food. We know what food at the supermarket's going to be hot, and we don't buy it. And Denise Ann, for her birthday, she's like, you know what? We got to use this Pacific. We got to go up to Pismo Beach or some great town. And Pismo's a wonderful town. And enjoy the Pacific while we can, because it's going to get so much worse. And the fact of the matter is, do we go up and enjoy the seafood like one fellow in a major anti-nuke organization the last week said controversially, and I'm being kind by not mentioning him or his group by name, that he's thinking about not eating any more seafood out of the Pacific. I'm thinking, what? So no, we didn't sample the seafood. And when you have the government reacting to this saying, you know what, everything's A-OK, we're got RadNet, it says A-OK, you and I know, Jeff, that the kinds of readings we ought to be getting in the atmosphere for beta radionuclides, which are all man-made, the ones we're detecting, is about anywhere from 12 to in the 40s. From, around 12 in San Francisco on average count per minute to about 45 and around that, around here in Southern California, where we had a lot more nuclear work done, and it's the residual radiation. But I got to tell you, in just the last week, since we last talked, Phoenix is on the rise. Phoenix is up at 450. It is going up in Phoenix. It's going up here in Southern California. I'm seeing a pattern I have not seen for a long time in Anaheim. Anaheim is up from normally Anaheim's cranking in around 25. It's about 175 right now.
175 CPM?
Oh, yeah. Eureka, which normally is way low, around 10, 12, it's up now to 150. Now, this is along the coast. Fresno, 500 counts per minute. Los Angeles. Now, remember, I said it was about in the 40s and low 50s. For counts per minute, Los Angeles, since we last talked, hit 250. So why are we here? Because we try to control the air, control the food, control the water, and control ourselves by seeking the right information, and you're at the right spot for it. New Mexico, Jeff, has gone up to 400 since we last talked. Corvallis is generally in the 40s range normally.
Right.
In the last week since we talked, it's gone to 275. Today, it's at about 160.
Now, these are peak reads in surges that move through.
Yes.
Or are these 8 or 12 hour averages?
These are every day. I don't know exactly how they do it, but for my money, what they would do is do a 24 hour thing and then divide. And these are.
But these are peak readings. Now, when you say 500, I don't care.
No, no, no. I'm saying that the average reading for that day, uh-huh. I'm giving you the peak for the last week.
Got it. But my point is, if there's a peak of 500 in Fresno, I don't care when it is. That's incredible.
Well, how's 750 in Amarillo?
Okay.
Amarillo, Texas,
I'm telling you, folks, there's nowhere to hide. It's all in the air. It's in the jet stream and the air currents. But 750, a reading of 750, just outside in the ambient environment.
That's
unbelievable.
Right. That's right. And you have the government saying, you know, everything's A-okay. And then, you know what? This issue doesn't seem to have any party line. This is like left, right, center, upside down, you know, right side up. It is just you, me, and everyone we know are getting the short end of the stick because the information that's put out, after what we have just talked about, Jeff, we have the kind of hooey that came out in the New York Times today, the gray lady, the bastion of the left. And it's called Fear versus Radiation, the mismatch. And the guy talks about, he prefaces his whole rant on this very first sentence. Yet leading health scientists say the radiation from Fukushima has been relatively harmless, which is similar to results found after studying the health effects of Chernobyl. With all that evidence, why does our fear of all things nuclear persist? And what peril does that fear itself pose for society? Now, the people who are listening to us right now have got to be shaking their heads. This got into the New York Times. And what does the guy say? Oh, there's some great things happening. As a matter of fact, quote, some are taking steps in the right direction. The Environmental Protection Agency has just proposed new guidelines for communities about what types of protection would be necessary for a range of nuclear incidents, like, you know, meltdowns, bombs going off. Folks,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We wrote about this, and thanks to Jeff, you know about it, in the last couple of months. And what does the government's idea of a protective active guide bring us? It brings us a raising of level in plutonium-239, for instance, in farm soil, the most fearsome radionuclide on the planet, plutonium-239. It gives us acceptable levels that through use of that soil right there, the farmer over his lifetime will have a 100% chance of acquiring a fatal cancer due to that plutonium-239 eight times over. You have an 800% chance. These are the new government guidelines for if we have a little problem like that nuclear power plant that we showed in Black Swan Songs, it might be vulnerable to a terrorist attack. Somebody does something, all heck breaks loose. Don't worry about it. We changed the numbers. We made the strontium thousands of times more than what we used to shoot for. We used to shoot for a preliminary remediation goal of strontium where we want it not to be higher than this amount. Now, the number's 7,022 times higher. If you talk about what's considered the maximum level of cesium-137 that's safe to drink, well, the new number is 270 times higher than that.
Oh, jeez.
270 times. Somebody's getting paid with your money to come up with that.
It's incredible.
And this is in the New York Times today. It's all good. It's all good. But you know what, Jeff? We have a lot of people that listen to us from Great Britain. I've gotten some wonderful messages from British and Irish and just terrific folks in Europe.
Yeah, yep.
And
yep.
Today, Britain okays two nuclear reactors for the south coast of England. And these 20 $6 billion reactors, which the British say, we got partners in the Chinese here and some other big group. Mm-hmm. We're going to build this thing. It's not going to cost you guys anything. It's just going to pave the roads with gold. Well, the fact of the matter, no sooner had it come out than environmental groups just pointed out, no, wait a minute. The public's going to be paying for the financing of the insurance of the thing. The company that built these two reactors will only be liable for, at most, 1.2 billion British pounds in case there's a Fukushima-type accident when, according to the publication, according to this group, Fukushima has already cost easily over 300 billion British pounds. And you're going to, you know, don't worry, after 1.2, you're good. So Britain, bums rush today. Hey, you got the United States. Everything's fine. You got the liberal paper putting up this kind of hooey. Everything's fine. But I'll tell you what. There are people that are listening. There are people that take this serious. And I don't know if you know about this, Jeff, but this is truly, truly awesome and inspiring. Over the weekend in San Francisco, hundreds of people went to the beach, and they stood and made a big slogan on the beach that says, Fukushima is here.
Well,
it's extraordinary. Photos of it from helicopters.
Good job, folks, if you're listening in. It is here, and it's coming much worse than it is now. There's another typhoon heading to Fukushima Daiichi. The last one caused a collapse. A worker just said it was a collapse. Something collapsed at the plant. Didn't say if it was a building. It seemed like it was suggested that it was some earthen works of some kind. But the next one could push any one of those buildings over. They're wrecks. And they're falling apart. We have to take a break. We'll come right back with Michael as we continue in just a few minutes, trying to warn you about things your government will never tell you about. Next. Okay, back with Michael Collins, and we're talking about the reality of what's coming here. What's coming here is radiation like few people can even imagine. We've already had the specter, of course, 2.5 years ago when Fukushima blew, of people in Seattle, Vancouver, up in that area, breathing, according to Arnie Gunderson, up to 6 hot nuclear particles a day. Each one of which, of course, can ultimately result in the death of those people. So we'll see. It'll be deniable because the years will pass. Cancers will show up. Where'd you get the lung cancer? You don't smoke? Well, air pollution. Who knows? No, you got it from breathing what they call a fuel flea, a hot particle. This is a tragedy of unimaginable proportion. And for those of you who don't like negative news, you know, you don't have to listen. That's okay. But it's our responsibility to do it. If we don't tell you, or at least make it available to people, where are you going to get it? And unfortunately, there are a lot of internet sites that do half-assed jobs. They don't really bear down on it. That's okay. They're trying. But we try 24/7 here, and we do our best. And you can trust what EnviroReporter.com will bring forward always. And I'm curious about how people forget when they say, well, the West Coast is doomed. Remember all, well, I don't know what happened to your friend in St. Louis. He used to send us a lot. Mr. Porter blog. Porter. That's not, it's Potter. And Boise, Idaho had the highest readings in the United States early on. And the EPA went in there and they had a full radiation monitoring station there. It was just set up, part of the EPA network. They closed that station, actually took it apart, put it in 18-wheelers and drove it out of there. They closed it down because they didn't want any more high readings coming out from other parts of the country. So they don't care. They do not care. And they'll lie and lie and lie. And these nuclear power plants are so insane. It's too bad that the people who build them can't be held accountable. Why does the world have to pay? That's the problem. If it was just something localized to the plant itself, to hell with them. But these things go all over the world, and they're going to have to monitor the Pacific Ocean for hundreds, if not thousands of years because of this. No one knows where the melted cores are. They're down into the ground. They may eventually migrate right into the ocean. Nobody knows. It's all sickening, and they still have no plan. And we were treated to pictures 2 days ago of Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe in Fukushima. I'm not sure. Maybe he was just partaking, but he was eating seafood from Fukushima. The guy's nuts. But that was part of the Japan denial paradigm, and boy, do they have one working.
He picked the wrong time to sample the local fish, because you know something? When we hear about these typhoons coming in, and we got another one bearing down, I think a lot of us are thinking about, is it going to knock down those buildings?
Well, it could easily.
Oh, totally. Those spent fuel pools, are they going to come crashing down? Because in the wisdom of the Mark I design, they're four stories up off the ground inside the reactor building where the reactor is, at the same time not protected like the reactor is. But I got to tell you, Jeff, it's not just that. We also know that all that extra water sloshing into this site that is got just several inches below it, and it mustn't be uniform. It must somehow, just my guessing, is that it's not a homogenous thing. You might dig down a foot and hit water, and you might dig down 10 and not. But I don't know. But I can tell you this. That's what we're usually thinking about. That thing going to lean over. Didn't you tell us it was like 30 inches on one side of the building number 4?
Yeah, well, reactor building 4 has subsided 31 inches at one point in its perimeter already. And they are finding groundwater now 5 inches below the surface in places. Just stick a shovel in 5 inches and there's water. So the whole thing is turning into mush, and these buildings are starting to sag into it.
And what most people don't know, except for the folks that listen to this program, is just that if you lose water to these spent fuel pools for a while, and the rods hit each other, they'll start fissioning again, and a fire will erupt at temperatures that it's just impossible to put out once it really gets going. No amount of water is going to do it. We narrowly averted that when the disaster started. But I got to tell you, Jeff, the thing about it is with old Prime Minister there sampling the wares is the readings of radiation that went up after the last big storm went through. In just the last week, the contamination level of a plant drain went up by the plant 95 times right near the sea. On the same time, TEPCO comes out and says, nothing's leaking into the sea. Another drain jumped by 15 times.
Yeah.
But 15 times this, the reading was 34 million becquerels per cubic liter. And that's
34 million? Wait. 34 million?
34 million
per cubic liter.
Yeah. All the beta density in the groundwater has jumped by 6,557 times since the typhoon to 400 million becquerels per cubic meter, not liter. So it's an area measurement.
Well, I figured take a yardstick and square it just for fun. Keep it simple.
They discharged 9 tank area dam water containers.
Oh, they use that to dump so much water from those tanks.
Yeah, it's raining. Let's let it rip. And so, you know, when we talk about have to monitor the Pacific for God knows how long, the fact of the matter is, you know, according to what that yachtsman went through, what's to monitor? And, you know, the fact of the matter is, with all the so-called gloom and doom and the stuff we talk about, we're the only place that you can actually find out, well, can I do anything about it? Of course you can. And the fact of the matter, you're doing it right now. But you control your air, water, and food. You're getting there. You're getting there. And, you know, we're getting into holiday season again. You and I always encourage folks to save it on up. Get yourself an inspector, nuclear radiation monitor.
It's not a joke. You have to have it, and you should take it in the store with you, and you should not have any hesitation at all. Bring a put it in a plastic baggie, so you don't contaminate the screen that protects the Geiger tube on the backside of it, and it'll tell you. You can read it in microsieverts. You can read it in CPM, whatever you want. And it's real simple to use, very simple. You can have it in audio mode. Here it go tick, 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 or keep it off. It doesn't matter. But you'll see more and more people with these things. There are many good ones on the market, but the Inspector Plus is the best. And I've got a friend, you've got a friend, Tim, over at GeigerCounters.com. It's a family-owned business. And if you buy, I'd suggest you buy from Tim. Tell him I sent you. At GeigerCounters.com. That's a Christmas gift for the family, for someone you care about, for yourself. Seriously. Now,
whole neighborhood is going to want to their food.
Multiple homes should go together and buy one.
I mean, it's a de rigueur kind of thing. The fact of the matter is, when I go shop and I do the shopping, I do the cooking, and Denise provides dessert.
I was going to ask Denise is dessert.
That's basically
I get it. All right.
but I check while in the market, and you know I'll have store clerks actually look at me. But you know that it's the more.
Has anyone said anything to you in the market when you take one of these in there?
Not really. Mm-hmm. Nobody's actually said, "What are you doing?" And what I'm doing is look at any number of our videos. I'm detecting, and I know which food products are more suspect than others. Mm-hmm. I have it on audio so I can hear it. If you feel a little funny about that, you could put in an earbud, but you still are holding this device in a extreme boot covering, this extra thing you get to protect it.
That's a rubber boot, rubber shoe that goes around it.
Oh, yeah. And so I do the detecting right in the market because I want to know in the market what's acceptable, and I take my time. And you know, it's not just the food. There are other things that are actually radioactive in the market that I've found. I haven't written about it because it's such a strange phenomenon. I don't know how to really actually conceptualize it other than to say that the paper packaging in some food products, the paper's hot. So one has to, somebody like me who can actually tell what's hot and what's not, has to make the decision on the spot. Well, if paper's hot, do I want that food product? Answer, no. Now, we were talking about seafood contamination, seaweed contamination along the West Coast here in just the last week. And I just wanted to drill down a little into that, Jeff, because so many people come to EnviroReporter.com wondering, should I eat the seaweed? Well, the fact is, we've written about it. Most of it comes from Japan and Korea, Philippines, and a lot comes from the West Coast, United States. All of that says Pacific. I say seaweed, Pacific, no. No. And here's another reason why. And there's guys like us, Jeff, and the folks who listen are really, I think, fascinated by some of the details of the absolute radionuclide apocalypse that has descended on us. To be able, I would never think in my life I would be talking on the internet radio to the whole world of your listeners about this stuff. But I am. Cesium-134 found it over 8 becquerels per kilogram in our seaweed last week. Cesium-137, 8.88. But this was what got me. There was cobalt-60.
Yeah, I'm looking at that right now.
So one's got to go, well, what up with cobalt-60? Well, it's not natural. It's created by bombarding cobalt-59 with a slow neutron source. It happens when you have it in a reactor. The U.S. actually produces cobalt-60 at a boiling water reactor like the Fukushima ones. I don't know if it's the exact same design at the Hope Creek Nuclear Generating Station. But cobalt-60, what it says is it's suggests strongly is fission byproduct. Now, is it a fission byproduct that's been blown out of the reactor and it finally showed up in the seaweed? I say that it's probably that we're having fission. They have no idea about the coriums. We could talk about this till heck freezes over. But the fact of the matter is we know where they are. They're underneath the plant, and they're probably sliding towards the ocean. And at some point, we're going to have corium that is in direct water contact with the Pacific.
And the water will start to froth and boil.
Won't that be fun? And so then what will we do? We'll all run down to Starbucks, pick up our New York Times, read some hooey that, gee, you know what? I think worrying about this is worse for your health than, you know, looking at the facts like a beautiful mammal like a whale with a huge tumor on its head just floating on the surface of a completely dead Pacific for 3,000 nautical miles, which, if I may add, is more than 3,000 land miles. What is that? What is it, 4,000 plus, Jeff?
Something like that.
You know, the length of the United States. And so to find that in our seaweed...
And it's happened quickly. They talked all about dilution was the solution, and we cautioned against that. We were right. If 2.5 years after this, the Pacific between Osaka and San Francisco is that dead, and we do know that only 20% of the salmon came back, we do know that the herring populations off the west coast of Washington now, and before that, Vancouver, British Columbia, have vanished. They're just not there. We do know that many of the fish in the Gulf of Alaska are so alarming to the fishermen that independent fishermen have asked the government to begin to test the fish. They don't know how to do it, but they know their consciences are still alive and working, and that is encouraging. But the Gulf of Alaska is finished. The West Coast is really going to be equally as finished as Japan in time. The main stream plume of radioactive water from Japan will be here in the next 4 to 6 months. It has not hit the West Coast yet. So what we're getting already with this massive die-off and death, an obvious mysterious, let's be polite, I guess, aberrations in the activities of some of the great schools of fishes, showing already a precursor, an early wave of radiation is already well entrenched here and is carrying its load right to the fish. Plankton, algae, pick it up. The little fish eat the plankton, eat the algae. The bigger fish eat the little fish. You know the song, and you go right on up the food chain. And it concentrates every single level. So by the time the mammals eat it, it's death. It's over. And there's nothing that can be done about it.
And nothing is being done. When you hear a report like in Maui of all places, I guess they're not having enough Maui Wowie to get off their hineys and actually demand something be done. Now, what would something be? Well, there's all sorts of things, but certainly it's recognizing that there's this huge problem and it's not going to go away. And the way it's manifesting itself is such that I've seen the new distribution maps of the radiation coming across the Pacific Jet, and I got to say, from the get-go, you and I were most conservative. We are conservative in saying it's going to go along the Kuroshio current in a
right.
clockwise pattern like it does. It
Correct.
Has.
Yeah.
We were conservative about time, how long it will take to get there. We did talk about the fact that sea chop and foamy waves and the mist that comes up goes up and will join with precipitation and storms will move across the Pacific faster than the water. But I got to tell you, the new maps say that the much of the radiation is right on top of the water. There's a sheen, and especially the amount of garbage that's in the Pacific, there's a sheen. And even if there was no garbage, no pollution other than radiation, there is it's less than a millimeter thick, but it's about a millimeter. Every time you go into water, you can tell the top of the water is different than anything else. And you see this when you go to a pond and you see a leaf float on the top of the water and you see dust on it and those water spiders that run across it and stuff. It's a different type of actual physical properties of that section of the water column. That is carrying a lot of radiation, and it's moving sort of in a big front right towards the West Coast.
Exactly.
So when Denise Ann and I go out and have fun, they're down inline skating or bicycling along the beautiful, you know, towns of Southern California, it's with the knowledge that in a couple, 3 years, that mist, we're not going to want to be breathing it in. Oh, no. And all those guys and gals that own those multi-million dollar homes along the Southern California coast, you know what? I wouldn't live in one of those in a year from now for nothing because of what you're going to be breathing. You're the folks who should be buying the detectors and taking samples of the sea mist and checking it out, because you will find that there's a problem. We have found, first of all, a lot of the studies came from the Irish Sea and around a nuclear complex in the west of Britain called Sellafield. And there were a lot of studies about, does ocean mist, does sea spray carry radioactivity inland? They found that beta emitters like cesium-137, plutonium-239, these kinds of emitters had blown in to Wales and into England up to 200 miles. So we know that this stuff jumps. It demands, but will not get because we're saying it, will not happen because we know that it should happen. It demands being tested. It demands really getting off our high knees and turning to Japan and saying, you have blown it. We need to help, and you're going to pay for it, and bring in the biggest experts, because the Russians have a lot of expertise in this.
Two and two-thirds years, no experts have shown up. No experts have held one single meeting. Where's the United Nations demanding something be done? Nothing.
Not a thing. And people say, well, all of that costs money. Well, let me tell you where you can find it. And people on both sides of the aisle are starting to go, wait a minute. There's $60 billion waiting not to be spent. Right now, the Energy Department is planning to modernize our nuclear weapons. Maybe they don't blow up big enough, to the tune of $60 billion.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, come on. Look at what's going on in this country. I think we could use that money. Do we really need to shovel it again, decade after decade, into the nuclear industrial complex? The answer is yes, of course we do. Yeah. So we will. And you'll have to take it upon yourself to wonder, well, do I go fishing off a Santa Cruz pier and eat what I catch? Well, you know, the fact that everybody else is doing it, the fact that you go out to, office lunch at the sushi place here in Southern California, just because everybody has got their head in the sand, doesn't mean you have to. You know, Jeff, in the last week, a Japanese company came out with a new product, radioactive proof underwear. Now, I actually think that should be sent to the... I'm serious. Radioactive underwear. Mm-hmm. You'll never have to worry about that again. Well, you know, considering where the prime minister's head is,
right,
I think he ought to be sent a trunk full of them.
Good job. Good job. We had a request for, and I don't know if you have one up on your site or not, but a simple explanation of microsieverts, millisieverts, and sieverts, and the obviously dangerous levels of each. We talk about these things a lot, and somebody's got to write an article about it. Real simple, just a table, so people will understand. Microsieverts should read on your Inspector Plus 0.00 something. 0.00 something. If you see 0.01, you got to be a little pay attention. If you see 0.234, whatever, 0.2, you got a problem. If it's on the other side of the decimal, 1.6, whatever, microsieverts, then you got a bigger problem. Then it goes to milli, which I believe is 1,000 times greater than micro, and then up to sieverts. You're supposed to have 1 sievert a year exposure. No, not 1 sievert a year. See, I've got all these charts.
Quick.
Yeah, I've got all these charts here on the table, but I can't. It's hard to put them into words. Go ahead and see what you can do with
it. One is a way to, when you talk about sieverts, it's a dose-related measurement. Like, that's a dose. When you talk about counts per minute, you're just talking about the actual
that's
event
the rate.
Itself.
That's the rate. Right.
Exactly.
A dose.
Rate versus dose.
Exactly.
But it's the same thing, and the numbers throw me off, too. So,
it's a dose. We'll try and do something more on this. We'll get a table made up for you so you can all understand. It's really very simple. There are just thresholds beyond which you don't want to read. It makes you very uncomfortable.
That's
it's just
right.
Counts per minute, CPM, normal background CPM, anywhere from 25 to 50 is safe in your area. It just depends where you are. But when you start getting readings of over 100, 200, 300, 400, 500, 600, 700 in Amarillo?
Yep.
Then you got to say, wait a minute, something's really wrong here. Big time. All right, Michael, thank you as always. Talk to you next week. Keep
you
up the great work.
You betcha. Denise Sands waving her foxy hand at you and everybody.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thank you. Good night. Right.
Okay. We'll do that. We'll get a Sieverts, micro, milli, and Sieverts chart put together for you. Okay, I had one up there earlier somewhere in the Fukushima section. I'm not sure where it is, but it may still be there. I better look around my own site. Okay, that's our program tonight. Monday, we're off and running. Tomorrow night, be right back with 3 more hours of information and other illuminations for you. Take care. Talk to you then.